3:17 a.m. In the upstairs bedroom of a white-curtained house near Seattle, Sarah Black opened her eyes. Moving carefully, like a spy in enemy territory, she raised her head over her husband's shoulder and checked the clock glowing on the bedside table. "I should not go to him," was her first thought. "I should stay." Sarah leaned back. 3:17. That meant 3 hours and 43 minutes until the alarm went off. 5 hours and 43 minutes until her shift started at the hospital. 715 days since the accident. 87 days until what would have been their son's 6th birthday. Sarah closed her eyes, finding comfort in the stalwartness of each number. That was the reassuring thing about numbers, the unquestioning way they advanced and retreated, always remaining balanced. Numbers were honest. They gave her a foothold where she could locate herself. Sarah looked around, trying to see things as they were. The dark skylight, the pale white room, the blue patchwork quilt, the tidy house on Raven Lane where they'd lived for 7 years now. She concentrated on sounds, a distant dog barking, the digestive gurgle of a street grate. Sarah shifted slightly, and as she did, she felt a pain shoot up her leg, a ghostly spark she welcomed because it carried her back to her purpose. "I won't go," she told herself sternly. "I will stay here." But even this reminder had the opposite of its intended effect. Instead of firming her resolve, it only made her see his face. "Stop," she told herself sternly, and for a second it worked. To distract herself, Sarah looked around the room, the garret-like space where she and Tom had spent half of their married life. When they had first moved here, she had thought of this place as an engine room, full of gleam and motion. But now the room felt more like a museum, placid, expectant, everything arranged just so. Here was the blue wallpaper sprouting its golden field of flowers, the flowers of the condolence bouquets her neighbors, most of whom she barely knew, had sent for the funeral. There'd been so many flowers that they had blanketed every available table on their first floor, so many that the hungry birds and insects had mistaken their living room for a meadow, slipping through the open windows to feed among the end tables and the break front. For days afterward, their upper floors were home to a number of small, bat-like birds that darted from dark corners with such regularity that Sarah had nearly begun to regard them as pets. Here, propped on the windowsill, stood a clutter of family photographs, a seemingly offhand set of images that Sarah knew was anything but, since all close-ups had been carefully excised and replaced with photos that showed the family in a hazy middle distance, images that communicated, as the grief counselor had recommended, the idea of family without flesh and blood specifics. Or here, the vaguely dental shine of its combination lock, visible through the open closet door, stood the red leather suitcase that had belonged to Sarah's mother, a tattered and slightly rancid relic that Tom was constantly threatening to throw out, and that for reasons she could not divine, Sarah would not permit him to touch. Sarah tapped her fingers soundlessly on the quilt, craned her neck to recheck the clock. 3:21. 3 hours and 39 minutes until she and Tom would be rising, clicking on the coffee maker, until they'd be sitting down to their scrambled eggs. 3:54 until they would watch their next-door neighbor, Mrs. Wooding, emerge regally from her door to pluck her newspaper from the sidewalk as if it were a particularly distasteful weed. 4:39 until the workday began, the moment when Sarah would be transformed into her official daytime self. But for now, she lay here, watching the numbers, summoning her energies for the fight that lay ahead.